The George Washington College of Professional Studies Paralegal Studies programs are a proud sponsor of the DC Bar. You'll study with the nation's leading experts and get the critical knowledge and skills you need to enter legal, corporate, healthcare, or government practice with confidence and acumen. Whether you are looking to advance in your career or make a change, GW's academic rigor is matched with hands-on, real-time learning that will help you stand out among your peers and rise to the next level in your profession. To request more information about this program, please visit the link found in the description for this episode.
Welcome, everyone, and thanks for listening to Let's Brief It, the podcast made for law students by law students.
I'm Andrew Nettles.
And I'm Sydney Taylor, and in today's episode, we're going to be talking about student loan advocacy with our special guest, Courtney Weiner.
Since 1980, the total cost of both four-year public education and four-year private college education has nearly tripled. Federal support has not kept up. Pell Grants once covered nearly 80% of the cost of a four-year public college degree for students from working families, but now only cover a third. This has left many students from low and middle-income families with no choice but to borrow if they want to get a college degree. Student loan forgiveness has become a major point of contention in American politics, with some calling it take, don't pay, it's the American way. Here today to provide some insight on these issues is Courtney Weiner.
Courtney is the owner of the law office of Courtney Weiner, PLLC, representing clients in the areas of unfair debt collection, unlawful foreclosure, identity theft, inaccurate credit reporting, predatory lending, and student loans. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you both for having me. It's great to be here.
Before we brief it, can you tell us about how you began advocating for consumers?
Well, I had a little bit of a winding path. I started at a big law firm in New York, spent some time at the Department of Justice, another law firm, before realizing that what really makes me happy is helping people with real problems on an individual or sometimes class action basis, but helping people with things that affect their daily lives. I never expected to start my own firm, but here I am almost 7 years later.
And talking on your own firm, what does your practice consist of and what would your day-to-day look like, such as court appearances, meetings, client interaction, et cetera?
So most of my practice is consumer finance litigation. So that includes things under what I call an alphabet soup of consumer finance statutes, the Fair Credit Reporting Act, the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, Real Estate Settlement Procedures Act, dealing with issues that affect people's finances mostly on mortgages, credit cards, other types of loans. And most cases I'm doing litigation. So I'm writing briefs, going to court, doing mediations. But on student loans, there's a whole other dimension. People have these loans that are overwhelming, and a lot of people just don't know what to do with them. And it actually is pretty complicated. And so people come to me and I do an analysis of their loans and help them figure out the best path forward.
So what are some of these complicating factors?
Well, there's a lot of different payment plans. There's a lot of different options available. If a loan goes into default, there's consolidation, there's rehabilitation, there's different kinds of loans also. Most of the loans these days are direct loans that are held by the Department of Education. And those are the loans that a lot of the recent initiatives apply to. But some older loans are FFEL loans, and those are typically held by commercial banks and backed by a guarantee from the federal government. And those have all sorts of pitfalls that the direct loans do not. And of course, there's also the whole other dimension of private loans. And one thing I will say to everyone, because I don't want people making this mistake, never consolidate federal loans into private. It is a bad idea.
Good to know.
And sort of touching on that, I guess if there are any potential pre-law students out there looking to apply to law school and incur a lot of debt, are there any other general principles that you think that these students should consider before they go and look at the possibility of different loans?
Well, you know, obviously, before you take on any debt, you want to make sure that you're in a position, or at least expect to be in a position, to manage it down the road. Life happens. Things aren't always as we expect. But in terms of federal loans in particular, you should go in knowing what your repayment options are on the other side. know if you might need an income-driven repayment plan, know if you want to set yourself up for a public service loan forgiveness.
You'd mentioned your experience at the DOJ a little bit, and especially at DC, that's one of the local agencies here. And I honestly don't know much about the DOJ. It just sort of seems like one of those big intimidating agencies. It's not a lot that I know about it, and I assume not a lot that our audience members know about. Are you able to talk more about what the DOJ does and your particular experience at the DOJ?
Sure. I'm not sure my experience was all that typical, but DOJ is the lawyer for the government. That's the headline for it. And that means that there's a branch of DOJ that defends cases against the government. And then there's all sorts of branches of DOJ that do enforcement type cases. There's a branch that does environmental enforcement. There's a branch that does civil rights. There's a part that does antitrust. That's where I was. I'm not giving you a full list, but there's a lot of different things that happen at DOJ. It's a huge agency. DOJ is also the lawyer for basically every other federal agency. So when they have something that they need help figuring out or enforcing or whatever outside legal strategy is required, they coordinate with DOJ. There's also U.S. attorney's offices all over the country, and those are part of DOJ, and frequently lawyers at Main Justice will work with lawyers on the ground all over the country in defending certain cases.
And during your time in law school, were there particular circumstances or factors that drove you to your work within the DOJ, or extracurricular involvements or any courses that you took?
Well, I'm a DC native, so I have always been pretty familiar with the federal agencies around and have always held DOJ in very high regard. I always sort of in the back of my mind wanted to spend some time in government. I did not go directly there. I was at big law firms in a couple of different cities before that. One of the best experiences for me, I was at Main Justice, but I did a detail to the U.S. Attorney's Office and got to spend a lot of time in court and really get a sense of how to argue.
How did this work prepare you for the work that you're doing now in predatory lending?
Well, predatory lending is really only sort of a piece of what I do, and a lot of loans out there may be problematic in how they're serviced, but are not predatory at the outset. But in terms of how my previous experiences prepared me for this, I think especially my time at DOJ gave me a good sense of what it's like to be on the side of the people. And, you know, when you're representing the Department of Justice, you are literally representing the people with a capital P of the United States. And so I really like that feeling. And obviously all the in-court experience has been really helpful. But when I decided to switch gears a little bit, I like the idea of helping people with a small P. And so that's why I ended up in consumer law.
Looking at the Biden administration's approach and some of the recent stances towards student loan forgiveness with the Education Department, are you generally optimistic about the approaches taken? And I guess just sort of any thoughts that you have going forward?
Sure. So there have been a lot of great initiatives coming out of the administration to help borrowers. Student loans are a huge burden on a tremendous portion of the population. And yes, the borrowers chose to take them out. But as I said, life happens and people don't always end up where they thought they were going to end up and end up with these giant loans that are getting in the way of them being able to buy houses, marring their credit in other ways, and just generally making life very difficult. So I think the administration is right to try to figure out ways to address that burden and also address some of the past errors and abuses in servicing of federal student loans. There's about 10 servicers that are authorized by the government to handle these loans. So they're the ones who collect the payments, arrange for payment plans. They're the ones who directly face the borrowers. Some are worse than others. And over the last couple of decades, they have made the situation worse for a lot of people by, for example, putting them in long-term forbearances, or other options that cause interest to build and capitalize so that the interest becomes part of the balance and you start paying interest on your interest. I get calls all the time from people saying, I had a loan of $30,000 and I've been paying for 10 years. Why is it $50,000 now? So, you know, I think there've been a lot of great steps forward that I do think are going to help people. My understanding from the very recent news is that there's some of these changes, in particular the forgiveness, which is the one that's getting the most buzz, are subject to some litigation to perhaps undo it. So we're not totally sure what's going to happen in the end with that.
Also, there are some major differences between student loans and a typical loan, such as a mortgage loan, that make it a lot more difficult for students to pay off. Could you talk a little bit more about that?
Well, it's not necessarily that it makes it more difficult to pay off, but it definitely makes it more difficult to get out from under. The federal student loans have no statute of limitations, and neither federal nor private student loans are dischargeable in bankruptcy most of the time. So if someone falls behind and can't take advantage of at least one of the federal programs to help get back on track, then they're in a real bind. The big difference between student loans and other kinds of loans, mortgages, financing, is that for a mortgage, for example, you're assessed on your creditworthiness at the time you're supposed to start paying. And while things could change in the future, it's a reasonably good assessment of your ability to make payments. For student loans, it's entirely based on a prediction of your earning potential in the future. And that may or may not pan out. So student loans are a little bit of a gamble, both for the lender and for the students. So that makes them a lot different and has a lot more potential to make student loans more burdensome as repayment starts than other types of loans.
I know this is relevant for a lot of students, especially those going into public interest or public service. What are your thoughts on the current public service loan forgiveness regime? And do you think that that's going to be viable for many students entering into the public service practice area or practice areas going forward?
Yeah, so the Public Service Loan Forgiveness PSLF program is fantastic. It is a great way to encourage students, those emerging into the professional world, to do things that are not likely to pay as much, but really give back to the community. One thing I want to mention, and my understanding is that this podcast will be available before the deadline, but there is currently a waiver that is in place so that people might not apply to law students, but people who've been making payments of any type while employed by a government agency or a 501c3 can submit a waiver to get those payments counted. The deadline for that is October 31st. After October 31st, the regular rules for what counts as a qualifying payment under PSLF go back into effect. So the qualifying employment stays the same. You need to be working for a government agency or a 501c3. And, you know, that's something for law students coming out of law school who are looking to take advantage of this. Working for example, a government contractor or an entity, a for-profit entity that contracts with a 501c3, that does not count as qualifying employment. So you should make sure that you are keeping an eye out for what counts for that. Now, in terms of the payment plans, really what you're looking at is an income-driven repayment plan. The only ones that count are income-driven repayment plans or 10-year standard, which is a balance-based payment plan that goes over 10 years. PSLF forgives your loans after 10 years of payments. So it doesn't make sense to do a 10-year payment that's going to get your loan paid off after 10 years anyway. So if you are going into a job with the intention of seeking PSLF at the end of it, then really need to apply for an income-driven repayment plan and recertify that annually. I would also recommend getting certifications of your employment on an annual basis. It's not required. You could do it at the end, but just to make sure you stay on top of it and all of your payments are being tracked correctly, you'll want to fill out the form, get it signed by your employer, and submit it.
The loan forgiveness isn't the only recent change, right? Can you tell us about some of the others?
Well, let me talk a little bit about the loan forgiveness, and then I'll talk about some of the other programs that are out there. The one that's been getting the most attention is this $10,000 or $20,000 loan forgiveness. That's, for your listeners, maybe going to apply, maybe not. It only applies to loans that were in existence as of June 2022. So it doesn't affect any loans that are being taken out now. But for those loans that were already taken out, if you make less than $125,000 as an individual or $250,000 as a married couple or head of household, then you are eligible for a $10,000 forgiveness just off of your loans. It's not totally clear yet exactly how they'll apply it, but it's $10,000 off. If you've had a Pell Grant, it's $20,000, and the government knows who got Pell Grants. There should be an application coming online pretty soon that allows people to certify their income. And you will have, I believe, till the end of next year to do that, to get the forgiveness. But again, there's some litigation happening, so a little bit of a question mark. Some of the other things that are happening for income-driven repayment plans, as I mentioned, overuse of forbearance has been an issue in the past. And a lot of times people made payments on plans that were not income-driven. One of the great things about income-driven repayment plans is that if you make payments under them for either 20 or 25 years, depending on the plan and whether it's undergrad or graduate loans, at the end of that time, your loans will be forgiven. So to sort of set the record straight, the federal government is doing a one-time recount of past payments so that payments under any plan will count towards that 20 to 25 year forgiveness period, as will certain periods of forbearance and deferment. One of the other big things that's happening right now is called Fresh Start. Some aspects of that are already in place. Some aspects are going to go into effect on January 1st. That's for those who were in default at the start of the pandemic, at the start of, you know, the payment pause associated with the pandemic. It allows those borrowers to start fresh, get a fresh start. And it has major implications for credit reporting. And again, for most of your listeners, one of the biggest things is that you will regain eligibility for more federal aid. So I believe that piece is already in effect. Some of the other pieces will go into effect in the new year. But to take advantage of that, you need to reach out to your servicer or the Department of Education and get on a new payment plan, most likely an income-driven repayment plan. One thing I will say, and this may not apply to most of your listeners, but if you have an FFEL loan, you'll need to consolidate it to take advantage of most of these things.
So for students that are really interested in this type of work and advocacy that maybe attend a law school that doesn't necessarily have a clinic geared towards this area where they can get real practice as a law student, are there any summer or winter internship opportunities that they could take advantage of?
Yeah, so here in DC, there's a lot of good options. There's the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, there's the Federal Trade Commission, DOJ has a consumer section, as I mentioned. Those are all great enforcement agencies that will give you a taste of what consumer law is like. A lot of this work is also done by legal services entities. So groups like Legal Aid tend to have big consumer practices, legal counsel for the elderly. And one organization that I'm on the board of here in DC, it's called SEDEC DC, and they focus specifically on debt-related and consumer issues.
So in light of the litigation that is sure to follow the executive order, do you think that students incurring loans now and in the near future will have the same opportunities as far as the forgiveness that we've seen?
I think that the initiatives that we've been hearing about and that I've been talking about are a one-time thing. I think they are meant to address a decades of problems in the system. That said, I do think that those incurring student loans now will still have plenty of options to take advantage of. One thing that was announced the same day as the loan forgiveness that may have even broader implications is a new income-driven repayment plan. Income-driven repayment plans are based on adjusted gross income minus, depending on the plan, 100 to 150% of the federal poverty index. And with that amount, there's a percentage taken ranging from 10 to 20% on a monthly basis, and that's your payment. Right now, the lowest payment is 10. There is a new IDR plan coming down the pike that will only be available for undergraduate loans, but you know that's still going to cover a whole lot of people. That will be 5% of income. And the way they calculate the income is going to be different. Instead of subtracting 100 to 150% of the poverty index to get your discretionary income, they will subtract 225% of the poverty income. So the percentage is going to be assessed against a much lower number in terms of discretionary income. So I think that's something that those emerging into the working world and into repayment status for their loans should definitely take a close look at.
Well, as we've stated, Let's Brief It is a podcast created for law students. So do you have any advice for law students interested in helping consumers?
Reach out to organizations and attorneys in your communities who are doing this work. Sit down with them for coffee, see if you can get internships, and learn more about what you can do to help consumers.
Well, thank you so much, Courtney, for joining us. It was an absolute pleasure learning more about these really important issues. I sure learned a lot more, and I'm sure our audience did as well. And thank you so much for the DC Bar student communities for hosting this podcast.
This episode of Let's Brief It was brought to you in part by our sponsor, the George Washington College of Professional Studies Paralegal Studies Programs. For more information, visit the link found in the description for this episode.
The DC Bar Law Student Community strives to engage and support law students before you graduate and expose you to the tangible benefits of joining the DC Bar and DC Bar communities. Curated programming allows law students to participate in substantive content programming, leadership trainings, networking with practicing attorneys in fields of interest, writing opportunities, and other activities designed to expand your legal education beyond the classroom. Make an investment in your legal career by joining the law student community. To learn more, visit us at www.dcbar.org or email communities@dcbar.org. We look forward to hearing from you.